This is a workshop entitled The Effective Administrator. So if you're not here for that workshop, you won't be able to make it to the doors unobtrusively, but you still have time to make it. As I said, I'm the headmaster of Rockbridge Academy. I've been the headmaster for 5 years. My lovely wife, Christine, and I have five children, aged 24 through 7, and the youngest four come and go to school with me each day, which is a great blessing. And my wife and I have been happily married these 16 years today. Did I say that right, dear? Thank you. Okay. I have to say, when Patch asked me to conduct a workshop entitled The Effective Administrator, my first thought was to tell him, sure, I'll be glad to go track one down, observe him for a few days, and report back. But I didn't think I was up to the task of telling all of you folks what you need to do to be effective in your respective callings as leaders of classical Christian schools. So I need to say up front that as I discuss this topic, I'm talking to myself. You're just allowed to listen in. I've attempted to lay out some principles to which all leaders should aspire, whether they be headmasters, CEOs, military officers, or what have you. It's sort of like when your pastor preaches to you on sanctification. It's not as though he's arrived, and so now he's in a position to tell all the rest of you how to get to the mountaintop. He's preaching to himself as well as to all the members of his congregation. So with that tribute to modesty and humility, let's pray together, please. Our kind Father, we are so grateful to you for your goodness to us in Christ and in providence. Thank you for your many good and perfect gifts, for giving us the opportunity to serve in our respective callings, whether that be as headmasters, teachers, housewives. Regardless of how you've called us, help us to lead well and to serve well and to honor you in all that we do and say. Be with us this morning. Give me clarity of thought and speech, and this room full of folks, attentive hearts and minds. Again, thank you for all that you're doing. May we honor you with our words, deeds, and thoughts. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. I've divided these principles of leadership into three basic categories: personal, professional, and spiritual. Although there might be some overlap, and some might argue that one topic rightfully belongs in another one. These are not hermetically sealed compartments or anything like that, and I'll be available afterwards for an argument if anybody would care to purchase one. All right, so let's start with personal. Effective administrators have to support their people. They have to back them up. Your people need to know that if they find themselves in a sticky wicket, you're going to back them up 100%. Every teacher in your employ ought to know instinctively that if an issue arises in which his performance, his teaching, has been brought into question by a parent or a student, it doesn't matter, that you're going to be in his corner. They just have to know that, like they know they got up in the morning. They have to know that you're in their corner. Now, it may happen on occasion that a teacher does something really boneheaded, and no one denies it, not even them. And they need some sort of restoration or reprimand or rebuke. I tell my people if that happens, I'll always back them up in front of the parents. Publicly, I'll always be in their corner. But when we get back to the privacy of my office, that's when I'll chew them out. Publicly, my people always know that they have my support. And a truly effective leader will do everything in his ability to make sure that his people know they have his backing. We have to seek to get the most out of the people that God has given us to supervise. We shouldn't try to make them little versions of ourselves. God has given me unique gifts, He's given you unique gifts, and He's given all the people under you unique gifts. And we need to use the gifts of the people below us and who are working alongside of us in an attempt to capitalize on all of the gifts that God has dispersed throughout the body. Let me just tell you a little something about this talk this morning. When Patch asked me to do it, I sat down and wrote up what I thought was a good list of character traits and qualities that leaders need to have. And then I went to a few key faculty members and I said, now, from your perspective, from the employee, the teacher, the staff member perspective, you give me your ideas of what a good leader has to have. And there was quite a bit of overlap when I compared all the lists together, but I was pleasantly surprised with some of their responses. So, and they were grateful to me that I would ask. So use the gifts and the talents that the people underneath you or serving alongside of you have. Encourage them to be who they are, to use their gifts. Seek out people who can add something of value to your organization. You should identify their weaknesses with honesty, play to their strengths, work to make them successful. Our school should be making every effort to not only get our teachers and our faculty members, our board members, even here to conferences like this, to other teacher training opportunities, helping them pay for continued education. What I'm essentially talking about is practicing biblical diversity. I kind of hate that word, diversity. It's been bastardized in our popular culture. But what we're talking about is utilizing all the various gifts that God has given the body. That's biblical diversity, and we need to be practicing that and putting that into effect in our schools. Effective leaders need to be visionary. They need to cast vision regularly. They need to be passionately committed to that vision, and they need to be building for the future. I was appreciative of Gary DeMar's comments this morning. We must be future-oriented, and we must be painting a clear picture of what the future looks like. Now, my preferred agenda for my faculty meetings is to address the business ahead in the next couple of weeks. I don't like to meeting my people to death, so I only have faculty meetings every other week. Go over the agenda, the business for the next couple of weeks, making sure everybody's informed, making sure they know what's going on, making sure that they know what their parts in the events are to be played and so forth. We might cover some aspects of teacher training, et cetera, and so forth. And after a few of those kinds of faculty meetings, I begin to notice there are certain ones of my faculty who are beginning to wither on the vine. They want to be inspired. They want to know that they're working for something larger and more important than themselves, than their paycheck, than the grading of the papers. They need to know that there's something grander and more important than the nitty-gritty business. And so I have to work. My tendency, time for true confessions, my tendency is just to get in, get the business done, and get out. Kind of like how I shop. It makes my wife crazy. And that's how I tend to run my teachers' meetings, but I have to constantly work against that tendency. And remember, people need vision. They need to know what the vision is, and I have to remind them of that over and over again. When I lived in Georgia, prior to coming to Rockbridge, I lived in Georgia, I had an opportunity to build my own house. It was a wonderful opportunity. It just about killed me. But I think everybody ought to do that just once in their lives. And as I was working, I was there from the day they dug the foundation until the last splash of paint went up on the walls. And as I would finish work for each day, I would look back and I would say, that's what I did today. I put up that wall today. I laid those floors today. And my feedback and my vision was instantaneous and immediate. And my gratification was complete for that day. It was a good day's work. Bone tired, but I could look at that and say, that's what I did today. Teaching is not like that. If you need immediate gratification, if you need to know on a day-to-day basis that you've accomplished great and wonderful things, you're not going to get it from the teaching profession. Years may go by before a student comes up to you and says, thanks. I really appreciated everything you've done for me. I know that you were in my court all the time. So, because of that nature of teaching, that lack of immediate gratification, teachers need to have a clear vision for where they're going, and it's the headmaster's responsibility, the administrator's responsibility, to paint that picture and keep that before his people. Effective leaders have to encourage, congratulate, and reward their people. Everyone who's working hard in our schools, and believe me, they work very, very hard, as I'm sure you know, they want to be part of a successful organization and to be appreciated and to be recognized. I don't think that's entirely selfish either. It might be selfishly motivated, but it doesn't have to be. You should take time, as their administrator, you should take the time to write them sticky notes, provide them with attaboys and pats on the back, leave a little tray of chocolate chip cookies on their desk, let them know that you appreciate the work they're doing, keep a box of Kleenex on your desk, on the front edge of your desk. I've learned that the hard way. Let your people know that you appreciate them, not just the work that they're doing. If all they get from you is a sense that they're cogs in your machine, they're not going to be on board with you. They have to know that you appreciate them as people, not just the work that they accomplish. In Proverbs 27:2, it says, "Let another man praise you and not your own mouth." We're not to praise ourselves, but implicit in that statement is that it's good for praise to come from outside of ourselves, and we as leaders and encouragers of our teachers need to be mindful of that. It should also not be false praise. I'm not talking about false praise here. Just make sure you check it off your box. Okay, got married today. Need to move on to Bill tomorrow. I'm not talking about that because your students and your teachers will they're savvy people and they'll be able to sniff out insincere praise in a heartbeat. Trust your subordinates to receive encouragement with humility. Okay, sometimes we might think in a twisted kind of way. We don't want to congratulate them too much because they'll get puffed up. Well, trust them to receive it with humility. Sometimes that encouragement is going to be in the form of praise, tray of cookies. Sometimes, and occasionally, it'll be in the form of corrective criticism. In either case, we have to trust that our employees will receive the encouragement or the criticism with humility, as from the Lord, and for their good and not their hurt, and for the good of the organization as well, meant neither to puff them up or defeat them. Now, if they don't receive it that way, they need to be taught to receive it that way, because that's how we ought to mean it, for the good of the work that the Lord has begun. Effective administrators need to be knowledgeable and also model being a learner. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I'm a bit intimidated by our students and our teachers. Maybe you feel that way? I didn't have a classical education when I was growing up, as I'm sure many of you did not. And I often joke with our students and faculty by saying, "Well, I'm sorry, I didn't go to Rockbridge." Our students are studying things that I'm still trying to catch up on. They read things that I haven't yet read. And they try to talk with me about it, and I'll have to confess, "I'm sorry, that's a little further down on my reading list. I haven't gotten there yet." Sometimes when I come across a Latin saying, I'll have to go, if the Latin teacher isn't available, I'll have to go ask one of my students or one of my children to translate it for me, and they usually can. It's humbling. So I'm surrounded by excellent teachers who are knowledgeable in subjects that I haven't had the opportunity to delve into very deeply. And you know what? That's okay. I'm not meant to be the expert in everything. I'm meant to be the guy who gathers around him experts in everything, okay, and manage them. It's okay for me not to know. It's okay. It was said that the last man who knew everything there was to know was Erasmus. I think what they meant by that is that he was the last man who was able to read just about everything there was written on a subject. The last man to know everything. So we have to be content with being less than expert in a great many things. The important thing, however, is not what we know, but what we're learning. Are we modeling being learners in front of our students? Do our students see us reading? Do our teachers see us being lifelong students, which is the prerequisite for being a good teacher? We should make the topic of education, specifically the topic of classical Christian education and leadership, something that we're always desirous to learn more about. I just spent 2 weeks in Europe traveling around with this gentleman right here, Tim McCoy, the headmaster of one of the other schools whose students came along with us, and I noticed that as we were traveling about wherever we went, Tim was reading books on classical Christian education, leadership, management styles, and I was very impressed and appreciated that about him. He was a very busy schedule, very taxing schedule, but he still had opportunities to do his study. I thought that was great. We conduct open houses a couple of times a year, as I'm sure you do too. And parents are always keen to ask me, well, so what are the qualifications for your teachers? And I always tell them that one of the prerequisites is that being a teacher at Rockbridge is that they have to consider themselves students first and foremost. They have to be lifelong learners. We want our students to be that. Well, how will they, you know, Jesus said that a student, when he is fully taught, will be like his teacher. Teachers have to model that as well. Effective leaders have to be risk takers, have to be willing to take the risks. If you're always desirous to play it safe and want to take the safe and easy route, you'll be less effective than you could be. At Rockbridge Academy today, we put on two full-length musicals. The Music Man was our first effort, and then we did Fiddler on the Roof. Now, prior, and I've directed both of these. Prior to directing these musicals, I never had any experience whatsoever directing theater, musical, or non-musical. I'd been in a few plays, none, however, since college. And I directed the Pitt Orchestra. I was a music major. I directed the Pitt Orchestra for Man of La Mancha once. And that was about as close an orbit I ever came to directing musical theater. And as I was getting ready for directing these shows, I got together a couple of manuals and read them. And the first law of directing musical theater was, don't do it unless you've had years of experience directing theater. Well, it was too late for that. I threw that book aside and went to the next one. But this was a challenge that our school and our parents and our students were particularly keen for. They were geared up for it. They were primed to undertake this challenge. They just needed somebody in front to lead the charge. So I said, okay, well, let's go. So I gathered as many willing people around me as I could and jumped in. Without trying to sound braggadocious, I think the efforts came off well. Once the productions were done and over with, the community building effects that I saw taking place in the school were incalculable. The kids came together, the parents came together, outsiders came together, and we were able to look back and go, wow, we did that. They just needed somebody who said, sure. I have no idea what it takes to do that. Maybe that's a blessing that I'm ignorant of what I'm about to jump into, but let's go. As I mentioned, I take our rising seniors on our school's sort of grand tour to Greece and Italy each year. I'll be speaking about that tomorrow. We just got back from our third trip this last Tuesday. And up until this year, I've always hired an educational tour arranger to make all the plans, hire the guides, hire the buses, make the hotel reservations, do all that. I just kind of write the checks and get on the plane. This year, I said, you know what? I want to do that. We're going to do that. So this year, we planned the trip ourselves. Patty Harrell, one of our moms at school, who used to be a travel agent in a past life, help us. And she was more than helped us. She was tremendous. Tremendous asset. But we did all the work ourselves, and the trip was frankly one of the best one to date. So leaders must be risk takers. They must be people who are just willing to jump in and say, let's do this. While my board may desire that I say this with a little bit of tongue in cheek, sometimes it's the old adage, it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission, is absolutely true. Effective leaders have to be risk takers. Effective leaders have to have a sense of humor about themselves, especially about themselves. I'm going to tell you a couple little stories, but because there are ladies in the room, I'll tell the story about the flatulence machine. One day, one of my teachers brought to me this little black box and it was strapped with tape. And he had a very serious expression on his face because he knew this was serious business. He said, I just tore this off the chair, the bottom of a chair of one of the girls in the front row, and I found out that it was Robert in the back of the room who was setting it off with a remote control device. I didn't find it till the end of the period. So all throughout the class, you know, we were doing the best we could to ignore it, but all throughout the class, man, it was hard. I said, Matt, I'll handle it. I took the nefarious device from him and called Robert into my office. I adopted the sternest, most severe headmasterly countenance I could on my face, and I said, Robert, I understand this is your flatulence machine. And he was standing there, white as a sheet, ready for the axe to fall. He said, yep, boom, yes, sir, that's mine. Robert was about the eighth grade. I said, Robert, you know the rules. You know what's allowed around here. I have only one thing to say to you, sir. He said, yes, sir. I said, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Can I borrow it? His whole countenance, he just melted. He thought his, you know, career at Rockbridge Academy was over. He just laughed. He said, sure, have it. Reached into his pocket, grabbed out the remote, turned it over. I didn't find out until later that he had told his parents ahead of time he was going to do this. And they said, Robert, we're going to let you hoist yourself on your own petard this time, but we want to tell you, you know what Rockbridge is like, and you know Mr. McKenna is not going to smile on this activity, and if he suspends you, if he expels you, whatever he does, you're going to take the consequences. And he said, okay, I'm willing to do it. When they found out what my response was, the next day, I had a flatulence machine and a Neiman Marcus box on my desk. They'd bought me one of my own. We have to be able to laugh. Our last teacher's meeting of the year is typically a sort of faculty roast run by Laura Tucker, our director of instruction. And being the headmaster, the most visible guy, I get my share of roasting. And one day, my wedding video showed up at this roast, and there I am dancing to Huey Lewis in the News' Hip to Be Square. Last year at the conference in Atlanta, the first thing I do when we get here, I go to the concierge at the hotel and I say, look, we always get together for a nice faculty meal. It's a nice faculty meal on Friday evening. Can you recommend a place? We're in Atlanta, maybe some barbecue, but a nice place we can go and have barbecue. Could you make a recommendation? She says, sure, Sonny's. Just over here, Sonny's. It's great. So they have a good barbecue. It's a nice environment. It's a faculty meal. She goes, oh, it's great. Have a great time. Well, there was no way for us to get, we couldn't walk there. So I secretly had the hotel get the limousines together to take us over to Sonny's for barbecue. They had to go in shifts because there weren't enough limousines to take us all together. So I went in the last caravan over, the last thing, and I get there, and there's a couple of my faculty members, you know, coming across the parking lot in a hurry. The place was a dive. It was a Greasy Spoon. I said, oh, I'm sorry. I told her we wanted a nice faculty meal. I really did the best I could. I took a recommendation. I was just trusting. And to this day, I still have Sonny's paraphernalia show up on my desk, little packages of barbecue sauce and napkins and cups and stuff that the faculty must have, you know, had in their mind. Okay, this is great roast fodder, so let's just stuff our pockets full of things. And every so often it all comes out. And I just have a great laugh. It all has to, we have to laugh at ourselves and have a good sense of humor. We have to admit our mistakes, apologize and seek forgiveness when necessary, and then get over it and move on. I think the last part, get over it and move on, is absolutely essential. Not only do we have to do that, we have to require that of everybody beneath us. everybody who, all the faculty. That has to be a prerequisite. I require, encourage my entire faculty to practice this because harboring issues, whether they develop into bitter roots of resentment or not, are going to affect and infect the entire faculty. So the bottom line is, if I'm not modeling this, if I'm not being transparent, it won't matter what I want them to do. I have to model that before them. The effective leader must be willing to admit his mistakes, make restitution, apologize when necessary, seek forgiveness, and then move on. And we need to require our faculty to do the same as well. We have to be merciful without lowering standards or principles. Now, knowing when to be merciful, to exercise mercy, and knowing when to let the axe fall requires wisdom beyond our years. And we have to be praying that God would grant us that wisdom, as James tells us. However, if we determine that this particular context requires mercy and not the axe, or this particular context requires the axe and not mercy, we have to make that decision and then stand by that decision, even when the inevitable criticism comes that we're operating according to a double standard. Right? You know what I'm talking about? Why did he get suspended and he didn't? That criticism will come across your desk a lot. When that happens, when the criticism comes, simply request that those bringing the concern pray for you, pray for that you would have wisdom, require that they think the best about you, remind them that they can't possibly know all of the details, nor are you allowed to share that with them, and that their requirement, according to, if I understand love correctly, is to think the best of you and to pray for you. So be merciful, but don't lower the standards. We have to be discerning. I often tell my faculty, you know, we have a policy manual so that I don't have to deal with all of these situations that arise on an individual basis. However, one of the reasons why we don't have a policy manual, we have a policy manual not so that I can forget that I'm dealing with individuals. Do you know what I mean? We don't want to deal with something individually every time it comes up, but we have to remember that we're still dealing with individuals, and they each have their own personal baggage that comes along with them. So we have to understand who needs a baseball bat to the head and who needs a box of Kleenex. Who typically needs the baseball bat to the head? The men, right. And who typically needs the box of Kleenex? Right, the ladies, exactly. I've had men sitting right across from me. Ted, your lesson plans are late for the last time. I'm not telling you again. Your lesson plans are late. I'm writing you up, put it in your file. And they'll look at me with kind of a glazed look and say, Mike, so let me get this straight. Are you saying and then I'll have lady teachers come to my office crying. I can see they're visibly upset. Mike, I know that when we were in the faculty meeting talking about lesson plans, you looked at me and I know you're not happy with my work and I'm really trying very hard. I didn't even say anything. Here, have a Kleenex. We need to be discerning. Who needs the baseball bat? Who needs a foam rubber mallet and those kinds of things? I want to add the letter K to your outline at this point. It's not there. I want to add a letter K. We need to have a thick skin and a soft heart. Administrators need to have a thick skin and a soft heart. As the leader of a Christian organization, a Christian school, you're going to reap the praise when things go well, and you're going to catch all the flack when things go poorly. Even when we're doing things well, you're going to catch all the arrows. And the most disappointing thing about that is that most of the arrows will come from behind. You're out in front saying, "Charge! This way!" And all the arrows land in your back. Now, there's titters of laughter and nodding of head for those of you listening to this on a tape. So, just so you know, this is not not something that is unaware to this audience, I can guarantee you. An effective leader has got to be one who has a thick skin so that all of these slings and arrows coming at you won't defeat you or get you down. But he's also got to have a tender heart. He's got to be quick to forgive, compassionate, kind. It says the scripture says it's to a man's glory to overlook an offense. We, as headmasters and administrators, we have to practice that 100 times a day. I'll give you just a humorous anecdote to make this point. The gentleman in the back who's running the sound came up to me before I was speaking, and he said, are you going to be walking around here? Do you want the little lapel mic? Are you going to be walking around? And I said, no, I've got this podium thing going on, you see. One day I was conducting an open house, and I'm talking, making the presentation from the podium as I normally do, and then after the presentation finished, I was mingling with the parents who were in attendance, and I was talking to this gentleman, shaking his hand, and I'm just, you know, a couple feet apart from him, close enough to have a conversation, shake his hand. And after a couple minutes, he paused and he said, you know, I don't know what it is about you, but you've got this podium thing going on. You're a lot more personable behind the podium. And I said, thanks, I think. There's a compliment in there somewhere, I'm sure. I don't know quite know what. Those kinds of things happen all the time, whether they're intentional or not. So we can't let that kind of stuff get us down. We're the people out front, and we're going to take the brunt of all those kinds of things. I had one woman say to me, I was wearing a tie of some sort, that the tie was the feudal system. So there was the king and the vassals and et cetera, et cetera. She walked up to me and she said, that's a very interesting tie. My husband's in business, so he could never wear anything like that, but that's a very interesting tie. Okay, second category, professional. Communicate. Why do I say that three times? Because it's so difficult. It's such a difficult thing. My daughter Molly, of all my children, is a little love sponge. You might have one like that. No matter how much loving and hugging and kisses I give her, it never seems to fill her tank. She misses me the most when I'm away, which is really rare. I don't go away a lot. She doesn't do well when I'm away. And when it comes to communicating with my faculty, the student body, or the parent community, there are members who exhibit the same tendencies as my Molly. They never get enough. They never get it. Their tanks are never filled up with whatever it is I've been trying to communicate to them. Effective administrators seek every opportunity to communicate with their school communities, not only about the nitty-gritty details, but also about the vision of the school, why we do what we do, why we are who we are. Use newsletters. I put one out once a month. Mass emails, board desserts, grandparents' day, pastors' breakfasts, first day of school, last day of school, end of year celebration dinners, graduation. Every opportunity you have to gather your people together, share with them the vision, share with them the mission, the goals, the objectives of the school. Pound the drum. And then pound the drum some more. And then just when you think you've thoroughly pounded the drum, you've thoroughly communicated the message, obviously everybody has got to get it by now, obviously everybody knows exactly what it is we're trying to say, someone will come up to you and say, we're putting our boy in public school next year because we want him to be salt and light, or something like that. And you realize, I got to go back to square one. They're probably not alone. I must have other families who have the same mentality. They're not quite getting what we're about. So we have more communicating to do. Corollary to communicate is listen. Some of the best ideas come not from me, as hard as that might be for my faculty to believe, but from our teachers, our parents, and even our students. Communication is a two-way street, and I've had to learn that the hard way. But frequently when someone comes to see me and they have something on their minds or they have something on their chest they want to get off, I'll just spend that time listening, spend the initial meeting just listening, really, making sure that I just hear what they have to say and let them get it off. I once asked my wife, if when she's got a problem, if she wants me, what does she prefer? Does she want me to solve the problem, or does she want me to just listen to the problem and know how she feels? Now, some of you guys are sitting there going, he's been married 16 years and he needs to ask that question? I kind of figured the answer. I knew that, but I just wanted to hear her say it. She said, oh, without question. I just want you to know how I feel. I don't want a quick fix. I just want to know that you know how I feel. Now, I can't understand that because I'm not a woman and I'm just different. Men and women are different. And if I have a problem, I just want it solved. I don't care if you know how I feel or not. I just want the problem fixed. But that's what makes life interesting. So very frequently when our parents come to us with a problem, when teachers come to us with a problem, their initial response, they just want to know that you hear them. They want to know that you've heard them. I'll tell my teachers, you know, a parent will come and lay some difficulty out on their lap, and they'll come to me and they go, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? And I'll say, look, you know when you have a stomach virus and then you throw up, and as soon as you throw up, you just feel better. I said, that's what just happened to you. Okay, the parent just needed to get it all out. Now she feels a whole lot better. You're a little bit messier for the occasion. Just, that's all that needed to happen. I don't know that you need to do anything. Now, sometimes you might need to do something, but sometimes people just want to know that they've been heard. And so effective leaders need to listen. We need to develop our people. We need to train them, invest in making them better, help them grow. If your boards have a difficult time sending faculty to conferences such as this, encourage them to pony up. Find a way to make it happen. They need to be encouraged. They need to seek a vision. They need to come to places like this. We need to help our teachers perhaps take a class at the local community college or develop your own teacher training programs. Nobody knows better what your teachers need than you. And so develop your own teacher training programs and develop your people. Help them to be all that they can be, to coin a hackneyed phrase. Be organized. Be organized. If organization is not your strength, it's not mine, make sure you surround yourself by people who are organized. When I introduce my secretary, Cindy Davis, I tell folks that she really runs everything. I just get all the credit or the blame. Ronald Reagan was once visiting a group of young school students. And after he was finished talking with them, there was a time for some Q&A, and one of the little boys raised his hand and he said, Mr. President, what is it like being the most powerful man in the world? And Ronald Reagan, in his charming and disarming manner, said, well, down the hallway from me, there's a man who every day tells me what I'm going to be doing from the minute I get up until the minute I go to bed. He's the most powerful man in the world. Ask him. Effective leaders have to be visible. They have to be visible. My operations manager, Dave Collins, and I stand outside the school every morning from 8 to 8:20 as the students are arriving, rain or shine. And any parent who wants to talk to me can never say that they can't find me. They don't know where I am. I'm right there. I'm a piece of furniture. In fact, we've become such pieces of furniture out there on the front walk that if for some reason I'm not there or Dave's not there, people will come up and say, what's wrong? Is there a problem? No problem. It's a regular practice of mine, it should be of yours, to visit classrooms, not for teacher formal evaluations, just to drop in. Walk around the desks, tell that young boy what handsome handwriting he has, help out that little girl with the math problem she's getting wrong while the teacher's on the other side of the room helping somebody else. We should be so visible in our classrooms and about, out and about in our schools that it's commonplace to see Mr. McKenna next to my desk or at the front door or wherever. We just ought to be visible parts of the school community. Delegate authority whenever you can, but one of the truisms of leadership is that you can never delegate responsibility. Delegate the authority, sure. That's part of developing your people and helping them take ownership in the operation. But you're responsible. The buck stops with you. Part of investing in your people, stretching them to become what they might not otherwise become, and giving them ownership of the vision is giving them real secondary authority over some aspect of the program and having them develop it, bringing it to a successful conclusion. One of our high school teachers we've been involved, our debate team has been involved in a local Baltimore, we're from the Baltimore, Annapolis, D.C. area of Maryland, and our school has been involved in a local Baltimore Catholic debate league. It's just the one that fit most closely what we were able to get involved in, but it really doesn't quite fit our needs. So our high school debate coach is attempting to develop our own classical Christian school debate league in the schools there in Maryland, Delaware, southern Pennsylvania area, maybe northern Virginia as well. He's taking ownership. He's taking that ball. He's running with it, taking ownership over that thing. And it's to my benefit to help him be successful and to see it come to a fruitful conclusion. Effective leaders have to model excellence, expect excellence, and check to make sure that excellence is happening. As I said, we live in the D.C., Annapolis area, and I have a number of military parents who work at the Pentagon and the Naval War College and so on. So I have this coterie of military personnel, and sometimes they're willing to share their military experience and wisdom with me. And one of my Navy officer dads once told me, "Mike, never expect if you're not willing to inspect." And I apply that at school. I also apply it at home when my kids are cleaning the bathroom or mowing the lawn. If you want excellence, you have to require it and also model it. Before we even began rehearsals for Fiddler on the Roof, I gathered all the principals together, the producer, the stage manager, the music director, the makeup lady, the costume lady, and so on. And I told them, "I don't do schlock." I love those Yiddish words. "I don't do schlock. So this is going to be an excellent production, or we're not going to do it at all." And lead the way toward that conclusion. Now, this is not to deny the G.K. Chesterton quip that if something's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. All I'm saying is that I'm trying to point out that excellence is our goal. And if it's within our grasp to do something excellently, we shouldn't settle for doing it badly. Doing it badly is the best we can do, as Tom Spencer said yesterday, then that's the best we can do. But excellence should be what we're aiming for. We should model teamwork. Expect our teachers to buy into the organization. I touched upon this a little bit above in delegation. Let me just add here that if a leader has a kind of a sit down before you hurt yourself mentality, that if he has an air that suggests that all good ideas and all good effective work come from on high, he's going to stifle any creative juices within his folks, his teachers. And he's going to put out any flame within the breasts of his people to work for something bigger than themselves. One of the models of leadership in the scriptures I think we need to look at carefully is Nehemiah. Nehemiah was a great leader. He had a great deal of work to get done. And if you read in Nehemiah, especially in chapter 3, as the rebuilding of the dilapidated walls around Jerusalem begin to take place, we read over and over again how Nehemiah assigned work to be done to so-and-so in the vicinity of his house, or opposite their house, or near his house. Nehemiah was an effective leader in part because he knew that in order to get the most out of his people, they had to have a personal investment in the work to be done. So that work had to be important to them personally. We need to work to give our people at our schools the same understanding. And then I end here, communicate, 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 just to remind you, it's hard. We have to be about it all the time. Pound the drum. Lastly, spiritual qualities of effective leaders. We need to model godly character. We need to be men and women of integrity, men and women of trustworthiness. If there's ever an opportunity for our the faculty and staff of our schools to have any reason to doubt our word, to doubt or to fail to have trust in us, then our days are numbered, or we just have a lot of rebuilding to do. We have to be men and women of our word, letting our yes be yes and our no be no. We have to be open. We have to be transparent before our people. This encourages fellow believers and makes non-believers wonder. In front of my faculty, I'm not proud to say it, but I've been reduced to tears to the point of just being a blubbering idiot. I've also been humbled to the point of public confession of sin, as I'm sure you have been as well. The world has a difficult time understanding how that kind of transparency is possible in someone who seeks to lead other people. But that's what I love about the kingdom of God. The way up is the way down. The way to life is by dying to yourself. It's exactly not how we would design it if we were designing a kingdom. It would be, you know, all about us. We would only be seen as being the grand, high, exalted, mystic poobah, the high and lofty ones who never made any kind of mistakes and never had anything to apologize for. We have to be a godly shepherd. We have to know our people personally. We have to practice hospitality. We have to have our teachers in our homes. Seek out opportunities to speak to them about their interests. Just have a conversation with them. Ask them how their wives and their kids are. Ask them how their finances are. Let them know that you're interested in them as people, not as employees necessarily. That will help them understand that you care about them as people. Not, as I was talking earlier, not simply as cogs in the machine. It says to them, you're concerned for them personally, and I'm not telling you to just, you know, gin this up. Okay, as I said earlier, your people will be able to sniff out insincerity in a heartbeat. You ought to be sincerely concerned about their well-being. And your concern will say to them that I have time for you. I care about you as a person. I care about your family as a covenant community. Okay? We have to be humble. We have to be humble. We have to believe the best of our people. We have to be quick to forgive and respond kindly to those who hurt us. As I said earlier, it's to a man's glory to overlook an offense. It happens time and time again every day. And we have to desire our staff's success and uphold their reputations even to our own hurt. We have to bear stripes on the part of our faculty members and our board members as well, even to our own detriment. Because that's the job. And if the heat's too hot, we need to get out of the kitchen. As I said at the outset of this talk, I'm talking to myself here first and foremost. I was actually glad to be able to have this opportunity to put this talk together, because it forced me to go back to the drawing board and consider the basics of what my calling is. So I was glad to have the opportunity to think about these things, but I have a long way to go before I master any of them, as I'm sure you do as well. But if we desire to fulfill our roles as servant leaders, and that's, I think, again, a particularly biblical concept, a leader who is a servant, not a leader who is a tyrant, a leader who serves those underneath them. If we have a desire to fulfill our roles as servant leaders in God's kingdom, these are some of the principles we need to strive towards with all humility and prayer. Thank you for your attention.